Antidepressants get people better from depression, but what keeps them better? In this episode, Dr. Giovanni Fava suggests we may need to stop trying to stamp out pathology and start finding ways to enhance well-being as patients recover. Welcome to the Carlatt Psychiatry Podcast, keeping psychiatry honest since 2003.
I'm Chris Aiken, the editor-in-chief of the Carlatt Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a psych NP and a dedicated reader of every issue.
It's not easy to get patients better from depression, but it's even harder to keep them well. Dr. Giovanni Fava learned that lesson as he worked with people with depression in the 1990s, and he has spent the past three decades researching ways to keep them well. That journey has taken him from antidepressants to cognitive behavioral therapy to a new psychotherapy, well-being therapy, and recently, to an innovative way of combining medication with psychotherapy called sequential treatment. Other researchers have joined him in this search for better ways of preventing depression, and they now have enough studies together to fill a meta-analysis. And those meta-analyses point to conclusions that are not exactly in line with the way we practice today. Most people combine antidepressants and psychotherapy by starting both at the same time. But there's actually little evidence that that kind of combination therapy does much to improve outcomes. Instead, we see a plateau effect. Antidepressants help on their own, psychotherapy helps on its own, but combining the two rarely does any better than they did on their own.
It's like adding water to a sponge. You take a dry sponge and pour a cup of water on it, and it's going to soften up and get wet. But if you pour two cups of water on it, it doesn't get any wetter. It reaches its plateau.
There are a few exceptions to this. Behavioral activation has successfully augmented antidepressants. And there's a unique kind of psychotherapy for chronic depression called the Cognitive Behavioral Analysis System of Psychotherapy, or CBASP, that made nifazodone work better in patients with dysthymic disorder and chronic depression. But these are the exceptions.
When psychotherapy and antidepressants are done together from the very beginning, not in a sequential way, with very few exceptions, you don't see many advantages.
Dr. Fava was able to show that psychotherapy can augment antidepressants, and he did it in a way that changes how we think about the two treatments. At least for me, he did. Drawing from his early observations in the 1990s, he speculated that antidepressants were very good at treating depression, but were not so good at preventing it. Psychotherapy, on the other hand, may not work as quickly as antidepressants, but it may do more to keep people well for the long haul. So he set out to develop a psychotherapeutic approach to depression prevention. He started with cognitive behavioral therapy, but found that it didn't do enough to address the problem many patients with recurrent depression suffer from. Residual symptoms. That's when patients continue to have a few depressive symptoms, but not enough to meet criteria for a full episode. Residual symptoms tend to grow like a weed in a garden, most likely because they affect behavior in ways that might cause depression, such as through avoidance and interpersonal difficulties. The more the residual symptoms, the higher the chance of relapse.
Psychotherapy specifically addressed the residual symptomatology, which in many cases involves anxiety, irritable mood, interpersonal difficulties.
And while residual symptoms put patients at risk for relapse, let's keep in mind that these patients are already mostly well. They've recently recovered from depression, after all. And being well is something new for them, something they need to learn how to manage and maintain. So Dr. Fava decided that rather than continue to target depressive thoughts and behaviors like CBT does, he would develop a psychotherapy that helped recently depressed patients increase their well-being so they could stay well. Instead of making the bad stuff shrink, he was going to make the good stuff grow. And to do that, he turned to an early pioneer in the positive psychology movement.
Thank you.
Marie Yehoda was a social psychologist whose work on prejudice, unemployment, and authoritarian personalities spans the decades of the 1930s to the 1990s. But perhaps her best-known contribution was her 1958 book, Current Concepts of Positive Mental Health, where she laid the groundwork for the positive psychology movement with this oft-quoted exhortation: "The absence of mental illness is not a sufficient indicator of mental health." In that book, Yehoda described the key characteristics of healthy people. They have a sense of control and mastery over their lives, and a consistent outlook or set of beliefs that guides their actions and feelings, so that ultimately they can shape their future. They adapt flexibly and can tolerate stress, frustration, and anxiety. They are active and productive. They work effectively with others and build meaningful relationships. They are realistic and accepting in the way they view themselves and the world around them. When these ingredients are more or less in place, well-being is the result.
Although the positive psychology movement credits Yehoda with getting them started, Dr. Fava clarifies that his idea of well-being and well-being therapy is quite different from the direction it was taken in positive psychology.
It's something, however, I like to mention is that well-being therapy has nothing to do with positive psychology. Positive psychology has been a very welcome movement in American psychology, but it's really oversimplistic. The more, the better, the happier. So the dimensions of psychological well-being, the more pronounced they are, the better, which is not true. For instance, autonomy may be very good, but if autonomy is too much and you're unable to ask for help or to work in a team, that might be a problem. So it's more of a balance.
Dr. Fava adopted Yehoda's ideas into well-being therapy and designed a randomized controlled trial to compare it to standard CBT in people who had recovered from depression but who continued to have residual symptoms. When it came to reducing residual symptoms, well-being therapy was the more effective of the two.
At the beginning, we were just doing CBT addressed to residual symptoms, but then we realized that it was not sufficient. And this is what led me to be interested in well-being.
He went on to show that well-being therapy helped prevent depressive episodes and improved recovery in generalized anxiety disorder and cyclothymic disorder. That last study is remarkable because it's the only randomized controlled trial with positive results in cyclothymic disorder that I know of. That's right, there are no controlled trials of medication in this mild but chronic version of bipolar disorder. Instead, psychotherapy is the best studied treatment.
Next, Dr. Fava tested well-being therapy as part of a new model of treatment for recurrent depression, the sequential treatment model. In this model, patients start with an antidepressant to get them out of the depression. Once they are largely recovered, well-being therapy is added on to reduce residual symptoms and help them develop new habits to stay well. The sequential addition of well-being therapy helped patients stay well longer, and it even helped them come off their antidepressants successfully. In other words, 8 sessions of well-being therapy worked as well as continuing the antidepressant and with fewer side effects.
That idea may seem counterintuitive, to taper off an antidepressant in a patient who is continuing to have residual symptoms. But Dr. Fava explained it like this: the antidepressant has done as much as it could and is no longer helping. So why not taper it off gradually while adding something that will treat the remaining symptoms, psychotherapy, especially if that medication is causing side effects?
If the medication didn't do that much and still had residual symptoms, how would you expect that the medication worked on those symptoms? So it's also another way of empowering the patient. Say, okay, now we're taking this off, but be careful, you have to do your 50%, otherwise everything collapses.
Dr. Fava is not alone in this research, and neither is well-being therapy. Others have explored this model of sequential treatment using mindfulness-based CBT or a preventative model of CBT with similar results. Like well-being therapy, preventative CBT also guides patients to keep their eyes on the positive. Instead of simply challenging negative beliefs, patients are encouraged to come up with ideal beliefs that represent their best self, like, I'm a good friend and a loving father. And to flesh that out with questions like, what would you be doing if you're a good friend and a loving father? Whether you use mindfulness, preventative CBT, or well-being therapy, this sequential approach is a shift from usual practice, where antidepressants are continued indefinitely, with or without psychotherapy. And it made me realize that something is missing in psychiatry. We don't distinguish acute treatments from preventative treatments very well, like other medical fields do.
We work with oversimplified, unsupported claims. And one of these claims, for instance, is that the medication that made you feel better is the best to keep you well. This assumption in medicine, there are many examples of what you use for an acute hypertensive crisis may be quite different from what you use during treatment of essential hypertension.
In our online interview, Dr. Fava talks more about when to use antidepressants versus psychotherapy in recurrent depression, and he gives tips on managing antidepressant withdrawal and how to weave well-being therapy into a brief medication visit.
Here's a hint. One of the key steps in well-being therapy is to ask the patient to watch for times when they feel well in the coming week, even if it was brief and rare. Then, when they come back with an example, you don't focus on what was going on that created that optimal state. Instead, you ask what caused that good feeling to go away. It leads to some revealing answers.
To summarize, you use the antidepressants so the patient is no longer depressed. You work with psychotherapy. Great Jerome Frank used to say that the psychotherapy is nothing else than guided self-therapy. In our studies, we're talking about one session every other week for 8 to 10 sessions. So you're not talking about intensive psychotherapy. Psychotherapy, lifestyle modification, may bring you to a state of euthymia, which is a step above the limbo of a non-symptomatic state. And the state of euthymia may give a more resistance to stress, to environmental circumstances, and may make relapses less likely.
Dr. Giovanni Fava is a clinical professor of psychiatry at the State University of New York at Buffalo and editor-in-chief of the Journal of Psychotherapy and Psychosomatics. Under his leadership, that journal has risen its influence and now has an impact factor that lands it in the top 4 journals in psychology as well as psychiatry. His book, Discontinuing Antidepressant Medications, is due out from Oxford University Press later this year. And now, for the word of the day, tetracyclic antidepressants.
Who put the tri in tricyclic, or the tetra in tetracyclic? The answer has to do with the number of atomic rings in the chemical structure. Tricyclics have 3, while the lesser-known tetracyclics have 4 rings. There are 3 tetracyclics in the US, but 2 of them are often classified with the tricyclics, meprotiline, released in 1974, and amoxapine, a relative newcomer released in the US in 1992. Compared to the tricyclics, these 2 are more selective for norepinephrine than serotonin. And then there is mirtazapine. Yes, mirtazapine, Remeron, released in 1996. It's also classified as a tetracyclic, though its unique pharmacodynamic profile really puts it in a class of its own. In this month's issue, we have an important research update on mirtazapine in PTSD. And in next Monday's podcast, we'll bring you 5 more updates from this year's crop of clinically relevant studies on mirtazapine. Got feedback? We're listening. email asktheeditor@thecarlattereport.com or leave a review of our podcast in the Apple Store. And if you'd like to earn CMEs for this type of learning, subscribe to the Paper Journal. Use the promo code PODCAST to get $30 off your first year subscription.
That helps us stay free of commercial support, something we're proud to have been operating without since 2003.